Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today we'll be taking a look back at the year 2024 for the Wandering DMs. We've seen the 50th anniversary of D&D. We've seen a new edition of the game come out this year. We've had special guests like Michael Moorcock and Luke Gygax, and so many great topics. We'll be talking about all that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into our annual review, I want to remind everyone that at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on Discord, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just join our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord server. And after the show, around maybe 2:10, 2:15 Eastern time, we will host an after party chat there.
Yeah, we love doing that every week. And if you're new to the channel, we would love to have you show up in our private Discord video chat after chat, share your ideas and experiences from this monumental year 2024 in the year of our game, D&D, Paul.
Dan, I'm amazed that we've gotten through six full seasons of this show. I find myself prepping to set up for season 7 next year. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's great.
Lucky number 7, Paul. Yeah. It's really been a joy in my life, Paul, to be able to do this. And we, as we say occasionally, arguably we should have started sooner than we did, actually. Yeah. But I've always enjoyed getting a chance to game with you and our circle of friends and stuff like that. And connecting online has just been a real huge bonus in my life.
As I like to tell everyone, the show was born as an excuse for you and I to hang out once a week and chat. And if other people wanted to watch, so be it. And I'm happy to say that I still feel like that's the vibe. So,
yeah. And welcome to everybody who's discovered it and get some satisfaction the same we do, thinking about our favorite games and our favorite things to do here. So 6 seasons, amazing. So 50th anniversary of D&D, and I think that's kind of been a theme all year, and it's been a really neat chance, I think, to dig back into original D&D that came out in 1974 originally and kind of share that with some people that maybe don't know the details as well as you and I do, Paul, and some of our longtime viewers and people that are familiar with the most common, you know, published edition of D&D these days. It's pretty neat to look back at where it came from. And, you know, for a lot of things, myself, there's been a long time. Well, nobody would play original D&D anymore. It's so sketchy. And it's a different way of playing, but it is, I actually prefer it more than, you know, what gets published nowadays, which is kind of interesting.
You know, I think it's funny to look back. I remember, Dan, when you and I first met and we first started our first D&D campaign together with a bunch of other new friends, that the great debate at that point was, should we use first edition AD&D or second edition AD&D? Yes. It's amusing to see where we've landed now.
No. It's true.
Oh,
it's totally
David
Heron
asking the heavy questions here. It's not for the big money. No, it's not. I wish they were as big money. Oh, no. Just keep the lights on money. That exists.
Yeah, right, which is great. You know, that came up in our household this morning, actually. Right as we're going to get online here, my lovely partner Isabel, who once in a while has shown up on the show and is great online, is in the lead in a play that's currently showing in New York City in Manhattan this week and next. And so she had to take off to her matinee at exactly the same time we started here. And so we had that same conversation of like, well, we both get to do shows today, but not making a lot of money from it. maybe someday that'll happen for one of us. That would be great. So I thought, Paul, that I might start by running by you what the top viewed shows were. So we can go to YouTube and we can look up what shows got the top views for this year, which may or may not be the same as our personal favorites, or the people viewing live might be different from the live viewer favorites. And whatever, if you're watching currently live, feel free to tell us what your favorites were in the chat, or also tell us things that you didn't like that we should never touch on again. We should know that too.
I'm curious to see what the numbers are, Dan, because you mentioned this and I said, great, I'm not going to look. I want to live react to what our top five episodes of the season were. I'm ready.
Okay, so I will say that let me list about the top five viewed things, and I'm going to strike out the ones that had special guests. Those episodes are very popular, and maybe that would possibly bias the numbers if we have some kind of big name showing up. So I'm gonna leave off our guests. We'll talk about that later. A second ago on screen, we had the thumbnail to our number two. Our number two watched show was What Do You Need to Play Original D&D?
I was expecting a David Letterman-esque start at the five and work your way up, Dan. What is this jumping in at two? That's not even an order.
I can do that. You know what? I can redirect. It's fine. I can take criticism. I'm not oversensitive. Fine. Forget that. Right. Fine. I'll start at number five, having extracted the guest. Jesus Christ. Okay. No problem. It's fine. If you're new to the channel, this is what it's like. Okay, number five, Paul.
Yeah.
Skill systems, right? System. And we talked about how much we love skill systems in our D&D. I think that's what it was.
I guess I'm not as much as we love. I'm not terribly surprised that's on the list, because that is a spicy topic, Dan. And I think that's part of our draw, is that when you and I disagree over something like the order in which to review the top five videos, I think people enjoy that nonsense. So I'm not surprised that maybe we had some hot takes on skill systems and people enjoyed watching us do that to each other. Okay. Yep. Makes sense.
I think so. So I think, what was the resolution of that? I'm a little hazy from the pummeling from that one. I think ultimately it was, we're not that fond of skill systems. They weren't in D&D outset. They were injected in the first supplement with the thief class that had skilly type stuff. And it looks a lot different than the core mechanics, the rest of D&D. We struggled a lot with that in second, third edition, where it was expanded. And it is this, it was not part of original D&D. If you look at the books in 1974, and it is kind of this weird appendix that was shoved on later.
There. I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of overly systemized stuff, right? I feel like one of the joys of old school gaming is what Matt Finch in his primer would have called rulings, not rules, right? Of kind of like, just be open to anything happening and just be prepared to rule something reasonable for whatever situation is coming up. And I like that.
And we'll put a pin in that. That's probably going to come up maybe more than once a day, actually.
Okay. I thought you were going to say, can I disagree? And we're not going to spend the whole episode arguing about that again.
You're being hypersensitive. You're being hypersensitive again. It's fine. It's fine. It's okay. And the other thing I'll say is that with the skill systems, it brought up the issue of a la carte systems, right? If you at some point people were trying to remove the classes from D&D and just like, well, that's not how people work in real life. You can take any class in college that you want. You can just mix and match. But our experience is that when you have an a la carte, just pick any power from this list of options, it's always broken. And there's going to be some particular best option, and practically everybody winds up looking like that. So that's one of the problems that skill systems bring into your system. They've kind of reduced it with fifth edition, which is probably actually a good idea compared to third, but it's still there.
We're in danger here, Dan, of just spending this entire episode rehashing the skill system discussion. So I'm going to cut this off and say I want to move on to video number four. Wait, but before you get to number four, I do want to point out that we've been had. User Eric has just discovered that we are in just in adjacent rooms connected by this wooden panel door.
Yep.
It's all a ruse.
He's right over there. He's right over there. It's true. Good catch. Good catch on that one. We moved in like the middle of the year. Is that what happened? I think.
Yeah. April. Yeah. Around April. Anyway, go on.
Yeah.
Go on. Video number four. Give it to me.
Number four is how to run a D&D one shot. How to run a D&D one shot. Nice.
That's a good topic. I like that. That's I can see that folks might enjoy that. That's a nice searchable question too, right? Like that's a thing I think people want to know on YouTube is how do I run a one shot? That's the funny thing is, Dan, I feel like for you and I, there was a time not long ago where that felt maybe obscure, like a rarity, as something we do from time to time. And for me, and I don't want to speak for you, but for me these days, that's much more common. That's generally how I play D&D. I'd say it's been a while since I had a long-running campaign. Not that I don't want that. In fact, I would love to have a long-running campaign, just haven't been able to figure out the logistics of it.
I agree. And as I've said a couple times, what I have had running for a long time campaign this year is my science fiction Star Frontiers game. From the TSR 1980s science fiction game, and that has been a real pleasure this year. But yeah, if I specifically talk about D&D, most of the stuff I've run in the last year or so has been one shots. And it's interesting that there's such, and we brush up on this quite a bit. There's such a distinction between running long form D&D and running one shot D&D. There's such different considerations that go into it, and it's something that the books don't really highlight. The book that none of the books in the editions of D&D have really ever highlighted this really huge distinction between one shot, maybe convention event type stuff, as huge as conventions are to the culture, versus long running campaign. And all of these topics, at some point, we have to brush up and touch on the fact that it's going to be different in a one shot versus a campaign setting. And it colors everything that you're ever doing. So it's really it's such an important topic to just be aware that it is an issue that things are going to be different.
Yeah. You know, my mind drifted there for a second about just the very topic that might be interesting to explore someday about the rise of the convention scene. Because as I think back to the early days, right, obviously Gen Con is older than D&D. Maybe that's not obvious. It is. Mm-hmm. D&D was invented by folks meeting at Gen Con. But that, like, it felt to me in, say, the late 80s, early 90s, that conventions were a rarity or an exciting thing that happened, you know, once in a blue moon. Maybe there was Gen Con. I don't think I was aware of any others, right? There was Gen Con that I could maybe go to once a year if I was lucky. And that now I feel like there's so many, and they're all over the place. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of people who got introduced to role playing through a convention rather than, you know, more like my situation where I was obsessed with role playing and then discovered, oh my God, there's a thing where people go and play it all day. That's amazing. I want to go to that.
I think that actually is a really good topic. Like, I almost want to, like, I have a whole bunch of stuff to say about it right now that I'm going to restrain myself from.
Yeah. Great.
We should discuss that because I think it's probably gone up and down over time. I don't think that's a linear progression. I think that's been sometimes more, sometimes less.
Great. Well, let's put a pin on that. Let's cue that up for season 7. We'll do a and maybe even if I'm really on the ball, maybe I'll go collect some data. We can look at the rise and fall and re-rise and whatever progression of popularity of gaming conventions. Fascinating.
All right. I think we should definitely do that.
Yeah, cool.
Number three has been our original D&D versus basic D&D series. So we did three episodes on that this year. That was one of our most popular things, actually. And of course, original D&D came out in 1974. When we say basic D&D, we're talking about these basic BX rule sets that came out in, I think, 1977 or 1980 or 1981, kind of iterations around there. And interestingly, you know, we talk about original D&D a lot on the show, but Paul, you and I both started with some form of basic D&D. And my longest running campaign ever was with the Moldvay BX rules. And it's very close to our hearts. So we were kind of taking this year as an opportunity to dig into, you know, why don't we do that now? Because we kind of love it, but it's not the rule set we really run with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's I still really adore it. And frankly, it's an issue I grapple with regularly of is, you know, is original D&D really the right rule set for me? Or should I be going back to my roots and running BX? BX is very attractive, and it's always difficult for me to remind myself of, like, no, I have these issues with it, and maybe this, what I'm doing is a better system. But even, I mean, you've even seen it. You've seen it at the table. I forget, and then I start making BX rulings, and then you look at me like, what the hell are you doing? it's ingrained. I was trained at a very young age to play BX, so it's sometimes hard for me to throw that off.
I get that. And for our viewers who might possibly be new, that's one of the places where Paul and I tend to be just a little bit different vectors, is I do come from these days more of an original D&D direction. Paul comes from a basic D&D direction. And when our intuitions don't quite match up, that's the place where a lot of that stuff is rooted, actually. But nonetheless, I'm the same way. There's a lot, probably once a year or two, I come back around and go, boy, BX is so nice. I should really use that. And I have to do that same process of dig into it and remind myself the couple of structural issues that I'm going to get aggravated by, namely the race of class that showed up there, not having fighter sweep attacks, the smaller number of monsters, the kind of unique combat sequence that they have in there. 95% of the time, Tom Moldvay was making great, great, tasteful editorial decisions, and then those specific couple of simplifications are going to aggravate me a little bit and not work with a war game, which I'm always interested in. So
it's funny though. I do think there's an interesting aside there of that. I think we both agree that BX D&D is probably the first edition to come out where they clearly valued editing. Right, that like it's the first one where like the language becomes concise and the layout is highly usable. Right, I feel like
true.
You know, the older editions, as much as I love them, you're sometimes fighting the formatting and the writing to try and glean out the information.
It's totally true. Yeah. And you know what? It's just attractive on the page. You know, the typesetting, the page layout, the art is really just welcoming in a way that the earlier stuff was kind of threatening. And, you know, maybe that's not even the worst thing for your subculture fantasy combat game. Maybe it's not even the worst thing in the world. But the BX rules had great, you know, art by Errol Otis and other people. And anytime I leaf through it or just think about it, I get excited again.
Yep. But I will always curse them for the false promise of being able to disassemble those two books and reassemble them in my three-ring binder.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
just a false promise there. Very false promise. They even went through the effort of drilling holes in the pages. Mm-hmm. I'll never forgive them for that one.
I wasn't going to say it out loud, but that was also the top thing on my mind. I was like, oh, the promise of the, you could slice it up because the sections were named the same. And I did that with PDFs.
The holes are present. Just doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
So close. Okay. It's just, BX is so close to perfect. Oh, it hurts. It hurts.
Oh, those jerks.
Okay. Number two, big surprise here. Number two, you can't you can't possibly guess what number two is.
I can't imagine. It's, what might it be?
It's, exactly. It's what do you need to play original D&D? What do you need to play original D&D?
Ah, and this would have been the episode where we famously like actually opened up the book and went through the bullet list in there of the required materials, right? Which is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. What do you think, Dan? Top of mind, what is the first most surprising thing that they tell you need?
Well, it's outdoor survival is usually my go. Do you need
another board game? Another board game published by someone else.
Outdoor survival to handle the wilderness stuff is like second after D&D. Other than there's you need the D&D book, which obviously you have because you're reading it right now. That's a tautology. And then the second one is you need another earlier board game, and then you need like pencils and dice after that. That's always neat to see. What's the second most surprising thing, Paul?
I mean, okay. Well, first of all, I'll say viewers, calling out 50 people. that's quite a few. I don't know if it calls out that you need 50 people. It says it can support 50 people. It does say you need, I don't know if it gives you a, like in the list of required equipment, if it lists, a number of people. But for me, you go ahead and look that one up. For me, the more surprising one for me, the one that always gets me, honestly, is chainmail. I always forget that there is no combat system in that book. There's no combat system. How do you make an RPG? How do you make the original version of D&D and just be like, combat, don't worry about that. Go use this other book. What?
Well, they have the they have the alternative, right? They have the alternative combat system, but they don't have a turn sequence. They definitely don't have an initiative or a turn sequence.
It's not there. It's not a usable thing. It is definitely not a usable thing, and I always forget it. And then I'm always surprised because I don't have a printed copy of Chainmail in front of my face to go grab and open up.
You don't have any ranges for missile weapons in the original D&D books. That's all in chainmail, stuff like that. So there's no to be clear, what it says, like in the that page in original D&D, the recommended referee to player ratio should be about 1-20. You should have about 20 players.
Still at least 20 people. That's shocking. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And right. And what is in the requirements is one patient referee.
Oh, yes. Love it when the writing gets a little editorial like that. That's delightful. Oh, goodness. Okay.
Now, let me say this. So all joking aside, that when we did this episode this year and we got back and it was an opportunity for me to really think clearly about what was there. And what is there is very specific things you should be that Gary recommends for documentation is you should have a 3-ring notebook. You should have graph paper and sheet protectors. You should have lined paper. You should have drafting equipment and colored pencils. And, I thought about that closely, and that actually changed how I keep records for my gaming campaigns this year. For a number of years, I was producing printouts and records in the digest size, right, that the D&D books came in originally, of like I could fold it over, I could print it out, I could staple it, I could have little booklets. And thinking about, Gary would run games with his digest sized D&D books, but then his standard sized loose leaf binder that actually had his dungeon and his key in it. I was like, that is a lot easier than what I'm doing. I could just print stuff out immediately, just punch them, stick them in the loose leaf. I could take pre-existing loose leaf paper and shove notes on it. And I actually transitioned to doing that this year after we did that show. And so nowadays when I go, for what it's worth, when I go to my Star Frontiers game, right, I have loose leaf here there. It's a lot easier for me to keep records. The player character sheets sit in here. I just, undo them. They're the same size as everything else. And that I do think that that's actually been more convenient for me this year as a result. We've had a little bit of discussion on our Discord server about, Dan, why aren't you just digitizing all that stuff? You should just have that all PDF records or whatever. And maybe, but a lot of the stuff is going to get handed to the players. Handouts, character sheets, map, stuff like that is going to get handed to the players. I do still find it easier to just jot in the margin by hand during the game. I don't have to rely on software or something like that. And that episode did actually change how I do my record keeping in my games. I think it's more convenient.
Yeah, I mean, I am still also a physical note taker for gaming materials. I don't know. I just prefer it. I will say for running a game, right? For prep, if I'm designing a dungeon, then yeah, I will do that digitally. Sure. But then I'll print it out and stick it in the binder.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. Same for me. Totally same for me. Yep.
All right, Dan, hit me. What is the number one most popular episode from Modern DM Season 6?
The number one non-guest top popular most watched episode this year was really early in the year, Original D&D Adventures. Original D&D Adventures. What adventures were published or available before TSR, the maker of D&D, started publishing their own adventures? And so that was an opportunity for us to dig into some lesser known, like when the whole idea of can you publish an adventure was controversial. And the makers of D&D themselves argued that nobody should ever do that. Didn't expect that publishing adventures should be a thing. And so it was this very novel, adventurous, risk-taking idea that you could share your adventure, your dungeon with other people. And just what that even look like was a very contentious issue at the outset. So we get to look at things like Palace of the Vampire Queen, of Chelric's Tomb that we've run once on this channel here with our friends over at WebDM, and Caverns of Thracia, which we have which we've run and had great time with too.
Nice. Yeah, that's it's fascinating to think of that that must have been an early in the season show, because I'm like really trying to throw my brain back here to remember what the heck we talked about. But it is really interesting to see how those things organically came up from third parties, what they thought was important to put in them versus not, right? Because they were treading brand new ground, right? Nobody had done this before. What actually needs to go in them is, you know, these days we look back at it and we kind of have a chuckle because seems crazy what they decided to include versus exclude.
Yes. And frequently, I mean, initially very sketchy, like Palace of the Vampire Queen, a lot like now that we get to, we at one point we got to look over Gary Gygax's shoulder of what his notes to Castle Greyhawk look like. And they were just one line each. They were just room 57, 80 kobolds, 200 silver pieces. No period. End of the line. And they're just name of the monster, name of the treasure. That's it. And what really formed a big transition was when friend of the show, we had her on once, Janelle Jaquez, started printing her adventures, like Caverns of Thracia, was really a kind of groundbreaking idea of a little bit more description, some authorial voice getting in there about why are we doing this and what are the connections between different places and what's the theme and the sensibility and the tone, was really the groundbreaking moment that these kinds of publications could be worthwhile. And when we did that, that was back at the start of the year. It was kind of an opportunity to celebrate Janelle Jaquez's work because she had just passed away right at the start of 2024. So Janelle was very much on her mind. We were hoping to get her back on the show, which didn't happen. And it was really an opportunity to think about really her making D&D adventures basically look like what they are today. Very fresh, really awesome. We've had a great time running her adventures. And that being part of what D&D looks like today is because of her novel work.
There's an interesting connection here, I think, to their earlier topic of the required equipment, which I think is summed up well here by William's question in the chat. who asks, I don't recall, does the book actually tell you what to do with all that drafting equipment, or are you just supposed to glean it? Right. And I feel like you see the similar thing with the with those early dungeon designs, right? They were very good at telling you what to do and very poor at telling you why. Right. There was not a lot of text, not a lot of explanation about here's why this is important, or here's, you know, what you need to be doing. Right. Heck, even just the very act or art of dungeon mastering was not really spelled out, right? It was just there's a referee, and this is, you know, this is how you run the game. But like, yeah, nothing about what makes a good DM versus a bad DM, or what kind of techniques to use to keep the game running smoothly and making sure everyone's having a good time. I don't think you don't see writing like that until much later in the progression.
And there's so much like that, because when I go back to early D&D, and this is the case for all the stuff in the 70s, 80s, just as one example, there's no description of any of the equipment. You get these equipment lists of things you can buy, and there's never any explanation for any the weapons, the equipment, the armor, the anything. You're just expected to know what a polearm or a partisan or what barding is. If you're playing this game, presumably you just know what medieval fighting equipment looks like. And that's not explained. The drafting equipment is not explained. The monsters are usually not explained what they are. You're just supposed to know.
I'm sure I'm not alone in having had the experience where a player at my table saw on the weaponry list mace and assumed that it was a small canister of irritant spray.
I bet some viewers shared what I thought what was going to be the end of that sentence was in AD&D looking at the equipment list listing the Lucerne hammer and thinking that it was a type of hammer that your cleric could use because it's got great damage output, and not realizing that it's not that, it's a long, sharp pole arm with a heavy end to it to make the pole arm smash down harder. And I probably ran a decade accidentally with my clerics wandering around with big, heavy, chopping pole arms and not realizing what was happening.
Even more severe there. Have definitely had a player assume, I get out my mace and I spray him in the face with it. It's not that kind of mace.
The funny thing is, if mace ever comes up in conversations with me, I usually make this D&D dad joke where I do the opposite. I go, what you really ought to do is you ought to get a mace. You ought to get a heavy flanged clubbing instrument, carry that around. That's probably more helpful.
Oh, delightful. Well, that's a nice review of the top five, Dan. I enjoyed that. Enjoyed that a lot. Very interesting to see what folks are interested in. I mean, you mentioned we had a lot of, you mentioned that you removed the special guest episodes. And we have on screen right now the thumbnail from when John Peterson was on screen. And I think it's worth saying that also we really enjoyed having a lot of great guests this past year.
Yeah.
You know, and yes.
And they're indeed, always very popular episodes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a reason for leaving them off the list of most popular is because they, of course, bring their own audience with them. And then, you know, I'm sure that it just absolutely skews the numbers because, yeah, people like to see the special guests. Anyone in particular there you want to call out?
I mean, we always love having John Peterson on. And frankly, the really funny thing with John, of course, he had his History of Original Dungeons & Dragons book, a huge book come out that was officially approved by Wizards of the Coast come out this year, which is great work. He was talking to us about the update to Playing at the World, which is hugely influential. I have it on my bookshelf right there, and it's kind of my go-to for stuff. And he, of course, does all kinds of great work digging up information that has otherwise been lost. And the really funny thing is that John always comes up as a topic with all of our other guests. So at some point, practically every guest we ever have on goes, well, there's this guy named John Peterson. Boy, he really knows his stuff. And we get to share that. Yes, of course we know that. He's a great friend of the show, and we adore having John on all the time. So really glad that we got to have him on in this 50th anniversary year. We did have Matt Finch, one of our good friends, on twice this year, which was adorable, both for his updates to his Sword and Wizardry game and also his Tome of World Building that came out kind of late in the year from his Mythmere Games company. So we adore having Matt Finch on. I think we think quite similarly. If there's ever a point where we disagree, I'm usually surprised that he's got really good arguments that convince me that I'm wrong more often than not. So that's always an interesting interaction we have, and he shows up in the chat quite frequently. So we are thrilled to have Matt Finch as part of our larger Wandering DM circle. Of course, we had Luke Gygax on, and he was releasing his Wrath of the Sea Lich this year. So again, we got to talk about 50th anniversary stuff. We got to talk about weightlifting with Luke. So I'm glad we got those questions in. And yep. Hopefully we'll be doing other stuff with Luke Gygax in the future again, because we adore having him on, of course. And then the number one guest, and which was our actual number one top watched show for the year, was, drumroll, I think it's come across in our thumbnail review here as we're watching that. Yeah. We had Mr. Michael Moorcock on this year, and I'm still, even though I scheduled it, frankly, I got in touch with Mike and his wife, who are lovely, lovely people. And we did get an hour to sit down and chat with one of the founders of the whole idea of fantasy literature, Michael Moorcock, get to talk to him about his Elric character, which is a fundamental example in the D&D books as early as Chainmail of things you could do in a fantasy game. And I still wake up some mornings and don't believe that we actually had an opportunity to chat with Mike live on the show, and think that I must have dreamt that. But the record is on YouTube. You can go back and you can rewatch it. And that actually was, rightfully so, I think, our number one watched show of the year.
Is it impressive? It's always exciting, I think, to get someone on the show. And it's funny because I get this every time I talk to people about the show, especially, folks who are outside the fandom. I always feel this weird need to qualify and say, like, oh, we have lots of celebrities. Well, I mean, we have celebrities if you're into D&D, because they're D&D celebrities, but you probably don't know their names.
Right.
But man, Michael Moorcock maybe blurs that line a little bit, right? Like, there's we've had a few guests of that caliber come on that, like, yeah, no, it's impressive, and it's just an exciting emotion to get folks like that to agree to come on the show. I'll go the total inverse though and say I was absolutely chuffed to get Rutskarn on the show, which was just a very random. Random thing, because we had a fan of the show write in and say, hey, I found this amazing article on this guy's blog, you should talk about it. We both read the blog article. This was about running a political campaign using Boot Hill, and you and I think we're both just equally blown away by that blog post, and we said, well, we should definitely talk about it. And then randomly said, well, let's reach out to the author and see if he'll show up too. And sure enough, yeah, why not, he did. And we got to whole episode talking to Rutskarn about running political campaigns using Boot Hill.
It's really one of the neat things about having the show that's even possible. It's conceivably possible to reach out to these people that we are appreciating, frankly, and get to run some questions by them. That was an excellent episode. Thinking about, you know, really, I think it was like September, October, we did that one. Thinking about, like, really old school, kind of frankly merciless mechanics, and how they really how you really benefit from, you know, really being immersed in the game, and kind of how you're going to act as your player characters when you could be easily murdered on any particular die roll, which was a really great thing to kind of reflect on, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say, One thing, just a touch before we move off the guests, and here we're looking at when we had Luke Gygax on, which was great, is one of the things, I think it came up right at the end when we had Michael Moorcock on, is we got to hear Mr. Moorcock talk about the time when he got to interview Tolkien. And at Oxford, and walked into Tolkien's office, like, yeah, here's the interaction that I had with Tolkien. I'm like, I'm talking to someone who's one step away from actually having a conversation with Tolkien. And I thought that that itself was one of the most amazing things that's ever happened on the show. And so it's not a Kevin Bacon number, but I'm like, our Tolkien number is now two, Paul. We're now two steps away from having a conversation with someone who conversed with Tolkien, which I was like, is the most, which I couldn't believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, given the fact that he's not around anymore, basically impossible to get any closer. It's as good as it gets, Dan.
Right? There you go. We've minimized our Tolkien number. That happened this year, Paul, season six.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And just delightful to hear him talk about that, like, in the same way. I mean, I always find that just absolutely delightful when you're talking to someone that you consider famous and they in turn talk about, let me tell you about the time that I met someone I considered famous. You're like, what? But you're you. You've met you, obviously.
Right. That's exactly. Yes, that's exactly the feeling I was getting from that. Exactly. It's, you know, it's really great to see folks as people, right? It's really great to see folks as, right, they have been where we have been, and they have been, you know, hoping for things and it not being clear at one point. And it's really interesting to, you know, their mindset is frequently at that moment of struggle and challenge. And it's kind of comforting to realize that no matter how successful anybody is, they had that mindset, and they probably still have that mindset of like, what's the struggle and what's the challenge in front of me?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. Incredible.
Isn't that kind of, you know, in some sense, that's kind of the point of D&D, right?
That's the point.
Right? Learn how to struggle.
is that the point of D&D or the meaning of life?
Are you saying they're different?
That's it. That is the message from Wandering DMs. D&D is life. There you go. Okay, great. So let's move on, Dan. We're closing it out of time, and I want to make sure that we have time to talk about personal favorites here.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's getting close. It's getting close. So I'm going to kick this one off because there's one episode in particular, or actually two, that I want to talk about before we lose time, which is I am so excited that in season six, we managed to get back to the Dungeon Design Dash. That was something that we had done in past seasons, but I don't think we managed to get any out in season five. I think that was maybe a season four thing.
Yeah.
That's basically where we take an episode to create an entire dungeon. We tried to do it in an hour, and this time we failed, and it took us two. And we're still actually now discussing how to format that in the future, because I'm very excited to get back to them. That's the long and short of it, Dan, is I'm hoping season seven, we're going to see more Dungeon Design Dashes.
I agree. I also like doing the, we're looking at Matt Finch on screen right now. And of course, we heavily use Matt Finch's Tome of Adventure Design when we do that for some ideas as we do. So I always enjoy that. The other thing we did this year is we got a chance to talk about playtesting one of them. So as we finished that somewhat more complicated adventure that we did get out this year, we playtested it with friends over the summer, and we got an opportunity jointly, because we were co-DMing, to see how it ran, to kind of refine some of the issues, and then talk about that on an episode. And so I'm really glad we get an opportunity to actually play one of them and kind of feed it back into our design process. And I'm hoping we can do more of that in the future as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one thing I will mention exciting coming in the future is that we have signed up to do one of these live. And I guess that will be part of season seven. Yes.
Yes. Like actually in front of live people physically in the room with us.
That's right. That's right. So we have signed up to run one of these live at the TotalCon gaming convention in Marlborough, Mass. I think that'll be kind of towards the end of February. I think it'll be super fun to do in front of a live audience. We're going to try and stream it. So hopefully it'll just be a normal show here, although I think it's maybe not quite in our normal time slot. Actually, I'm probably getting ahead of myself even announcing it now because I'm not sure that it even has an official time yet. But nonetheless, we will certainly be discussing it more as it approaches, and I'm really looking forward to doing that.
As you can tell, viewers, we're super excited about it. So we are we're barely restraining ourselves from talking more about our starting to do our dungeon design dashes actually with a live audience. So look for that in season 7 in 2025.
Yeah, and if you're in the area, you know, come on by TotalCon in February. Catch us live.
Definitely. Yeah. Get part of it.
Any other particular favorites you want to call out, Dan?
Well, one thing I got to say is that I have, as I've said at the top of the hour, what I have been doing for a long-running campaign is I have been running the 80 Star Frontiers game with the classic Volturnus adventure series. That starts actually in the box of the set. That's been super enjoyable. It's a little bit of a palate cleanser from normal D&D. I've gotten my long-term campaign itch scratched. I like the mechanics of the game. I've been more, you know, happier and happier with it over time. I like being able to do a little bit of a science fiction thing. And I personally, as I expand the adventures and do more research, I've learned more physics. I've learned more real world science as I kind of, you know, I can't just hand wave. Well, it's magic. Don't worry about it. I feel like I need some kind of excuse for what's the mineralogy or the geology or how high can you fly in a helicopter or something like that. And so I personally have learned quite a bit as I kind of build out more stuff to that adventure. We did one thing we did is in the spring, I did a whole series Thursday nights on Dan's Old Time Mini Show. And I got back into constructing and actually molding miniatures in my house on my stovetop in old time lead alloy miniatures, which not everybody should do in their house, frankly. But I got the whole series, the whole playlist. Occasionally I get somebody, you just shouldn't do that in the house at all, but that is what it was, you know, built for.
I love that part of the reason Dan livestream was so that he would have emergency contacts if he passed out at the table. People would be watching. Somebody could call 911 for him.
And I really appreciate you being on the phone for that. And I also appreciate, you know, advice and comments about the mold making. And I'd done it before with the spaceships for that same game, and now was building out player characters and, you know, enemies and robots for use at the table. And I got to improve my mold making skills, frankly. I got to improve my painting skills. I was getting advice and comments from even more knowledgeable viewers about things I could do with the molds. Probably the top takeaways are you need to air vent everything in sight. If you have any problem with your mold, the answer is always make more air vents, cut more air vents into your mold. Fundamentally solves practically everything. Also, try not to have the handle fall off your ladle while you've got molten lead on your stovetop would be like one of my favorite bits of advice. And then also, if your lead ingot is too big for your ladle, you can melt part of it and then grab the solid part with some pliers and pull it back off. That actually is feasible, which I didn't think was possible, but I had to do that. I had to discover that live at some point in one of the episodes. So that was pretty cool. We also did an episode on secret rules. One of the discoveries from that campaign has been the joy of the players not knowing the rules. I started playing. I mean, obviously that game's not published. Nowadays, my players had no access to the rules to begin with. I didn't provide it to them. And so part of the game by total accident has been the players discovering on the fly what the hit chances are like and what the combat's like, because neither of us knew that when we started. And boy, that has added a whole new dimension to the game. I think it's more immersive. You're talking more about real world stuff. You're not getting bogged down in mechanical, you know, rules types things. And so we did a whole episode. It's one of my favorite episodes from the year on secret rules of what the gameplay is like when the players don't know what the mechanics are. And we were talking about, is that a short-term thing? Is that a long, can you extend that to a long-term thing? And that has been a really fresh for me, like a really breath of fresh air in my gaming of, you know, maybe it's better if the players don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting insight to what it would have been like to run D&D in the very early days, right? When it was less available and you know, your DM was probably your only access into that, right? I mean, I remember stories of a lot of stories of when it was first printed that it was just so rare and difficult to find that there just were lots of bootleg copies out there, right? People were just running off copies with a photocopier just to hand them out, just to get the rules out there more. And certainly, and then the rules themselves peek at things like this, right? Like we talked about, I think, yes, in our BX versus OD&D, the point, I think, in some of the BX books where it says the DM rolls damage or the DM rolls, can't remember what, but specifically specific rules that were meant to be in the realm of the DM, not the player, which these days we find to be strange.
Exactly. And, you know, Paul, you mentioned at the top of the show of having, you know, earlier rule sets allow the referee to make more judgments on the fly. And that's, mm-hmm, that's also part of it, of if you have less mechanical structure handcuffing you, you can make a mutual decision at the table of something that just physically makes sense. And you have, mm-hmm, there's less of, well, the rules say this, so even though it doesn't seem like that makes sense to any of us, the rules are the rules, so that's what happens in this mechanical game system. And I've been able to make more judgments about what would the physics really be in this situation. And that just seems that seems like a plus to me.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. I guess here you go. We have just barely a few minutes left, but David Herron is giving us a lovely outro topic here of any goals for season 7?
Oh boy, putting us to the test. Because then you can look back and see whether we actually did
it. I've already stated one, which is I would like to see more dungeon design dashes. I'm hoping that we have, you know, I think when we first set out, we were like, oh, we're going to have, I don't remember what, one a month or something ridiculously, you know, aggressive like that. And at this point, I don't want to promise a very specific rate. I just want it to be more than one, which is how many we had in season 6. So, yeah, hopefully get a few more of those out.
I agree. That would be great. Hoping to get, you know, happen to get, continue to have other great guests on. Mm-hmm. There's some backstage work of arranging, like, you know, Paul and I and our viewers know that we're here every Sunday at 1:00 Eastern time, roping another person in and getting their schedule to work out. You know, there's always some work behind the scenes to make that happen. Hoping to get some other great guests, hoping to get John and Luke and Matt and people like that on. I would love to get Michael Moorcock on again this following year. And you know, one thing that I'm really makes me very happy with the show is that when we wrap a show with a guest, they pretty much always say, I had a great time, I'd like to come back. And I feel like that's like the number one really award that I take away from doing this is having these really wonderful guests and them being really positive about the interactions they had with us and also our viewers and the questions that we pose to people live. We always tell our guests, we have the best viewers. They're very intelligent. They're very learned. And you're going to get some great questions here. And that itself makes it easier to get people back.
Yeah, definitely. Um, Yeah, I don't. I'd be curious what other, you know, what our viewers think. Is there anyone we should be seeking out? Who would you like to see on the show? Like, maybe leave us a comment about that, viewers. I'd love to know, who do you want to see on the show? Because, I mean, it's a crazy thing I feel like to throw out there, and yet we've had success getting some folks on the show that I never would have dreamed of getting. So, you know, you can always ask, right? That's the thing I've learned from our experience with special guests. You could always ask, and sometimes they'll surprise you and say yes. Yeah. So why not?
Yeah. And I'll say the other thing, I hope we get at least a little bit more live play on the channel. Hmm. Hopefully I can get back to some live Book of War sessions as we add some more stuff to that rule set. Hopefully we can get some actual live play D&D stuff, like maybe, you know, no promises, maybe a design dash live play would be of interest on the channel. And, you know, and I'll say that it's a funny thing, because with my Star Frontiers campaign, we've had some great, amazing, you know, unique sessions. And I come away going, boy, I really wish I had that, you know, I really wish I had that recorded or available for other people to see. But of course, it would change, you know, would, in a Heisenbergian way, it would change what the dynamics were. So it can't be exactly the same. But there's just such great, unique gameplay stuff happening with these old school rules that I kind of always want that more of that to be out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I will say, Dan, you know, just thinking back on your miniature casting show or the Book of War stuff, you know. And as I reach further back into the past, right, things like our solo games, 10 Dead Rats, all this stuff, we enjoy putting stuff together for the channel. And I don't want to promise anything specific, but I like having the channel available to add stuff to whenever the mood strikes. So I won't be surprised if over the course of season 7, there is some secondary show on the channel for some duration. And maybe it won't be long, and maybe it'll be esoteric and weird and not exactly related to old school D&D, or maybe it will be, who knows. But I think the energy has been consistently there throughout 6 seasons to do this kind of stuff, and so hopefully we'll see some of that in season 7 as well.
I totally agree with that, and I'm happy with that exact same sensibility. And we are, you know, constantly having, you know, some things percolating. Sometimes they come through, sometimes they don't, with our friends or our acquaintances with ideas for one-offs or short miniseries or things like that. And I totally agree. I like having the channel be flexible in that way. Again, you know, maybe not D&D. Maybe it's a science fiction thing. Maybe it's a Boot Hill campaign. And I like having that potpourri available. And I'm glad that our viewers are kind of willing to, you know, try some of those other things out.
Yeah, yeah, same. Viewers, if you have thoughts of stuff that you saw in season 6 that you loved, things you're hoping to see in season 7, guests you hope that we would reach out to and get onto the show, please leave us a comment here in the YouTube comment section. We would love to hear from you. We would love to have your input on how the shape of season 7 takes in the following year.
Definitely. And of course, remember, you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites. So please look for us there and smash that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also through various third-party carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and Pocket Cast. If you are listening to the show right now on one of those other podcast websites and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users find our show, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, as always, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here for the past 6 seasons now. We couldn't possibly keep the lights on without your assistance, actually. So you're a huge part of what we do here on the Wandering DMs channel. So if you're not currently a patron and you'd like to join our brilliant, tasteful patrons, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And just like Paul said at the top of the hour, that gets you access to, among other things, our Discord server, our private Discord server, with a conversation about all these subjects is happening round the clock all the time. And as part of that, our live after chat that we do every Sunday, and we'll be there in about 10 minutes. If this is your first time, we adore having new people in the after chat. It's a wonderful little mini Wandering DMs community. And hopefully we'll hear today about people's ideas for their favorites in season 6 and what things that they want to see in season 7. We can hear that at that time. So we hope you'll join us there. Thank you so much for tuning in to season 6 here. I've enjoyed it immensely. It's my favorite part of the week, obviously. I think Paul probably agrees. And so don't forget, we are live most Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern time. We will be taking off as we usually do for our holiday break at the end of the year here. So we'll take time to reflect, kind of recoup, plan what we're going to do in season 7. So we will be off for the next 3 Sundays. We will be back on January 12th. Sunday, January 12th will be our next episode. So we really hope that you'll join us again next season for more thought-provoking discussions.
We'll see you then.